Welcome to the podcast of America This Week, courtesy of the Catholic Channel on SiriusXM 129. If you want to listen to more of America This Week, subscribe to SiriusXM and tune in on Wednesdays at 1 p.m. Eastern to the Catholic Channel, SiriusXM 129. You're listening to America This Week with Father Matt Malone and Kerry Weber.
We are back. You're listening to America This Week on the Catholic Channel, SiriusXM 129. I'm Father Matt Malone from America, and I'm joined by my colleagues, Kerry Weber and Sam Sawyer. We are counting down the top 10 stories in the Church and the World for the year 2015. And hard to believe, we're already at story number five. Story number five is the growing U.S., the growing violence and unrest in the United States. Throughout the year, the U.S. bishops, in fact, everybody, had to respond to the local civil unrest provoked by a number of incidents of alleged police brutality, including large-scale civil disorder in Baltimore and elsewhere. And the church is continuing to grapple with how to best respond to the associated rise of the Black Lives Matter movement. The year was also crowded with 22 mass shooting incidents, an extraordinary number, from Oregon and California to Louisiana and South Carolina and more. And all of these demanded pastoral responses. Not always a pleasant and pretty year in our nation's cities.
No, it's been tough, I think. I think it's been tough because a lot of these issues have felt like, in some ways, not new. You know, the fact that we have had so many shootings, sadly, in the United States this year, in some ways, I think, has made people both more outraged and kind of more resigned to the fact that maybe this is just what happens here now. But I don't think that's a good attitude to have going forward. And, you know, thankfully, people like Archbishop Blaise Supich in Chicago, he's called for more for tougher gun control laws. And the church has kind of tried to step up here in a way that I think could be a really powerful moral voice for good and for change on the issue of gun control, on the issue of just community, of bringing people together. There, a lot of times in neighborhoods where there is unrest and violence, the church is already at work there in really powerful ways. And so I think that element of community hopefully can continue to help transform those neighborhoods.
Yeah, I think that, you know, just as we introduced the story, it struck me, oh my gosh, Charleston, that was this year too. You know, and it already feels like it happened so long ago because there's been so many other incidents since then. You know, I think this really took a turn with the shooting in San Bernardino when we saw, particularly on social media, there was sort of a conflict between the necessary effort of prayer and accompaniment and grieving, and then also people being frustrated that, well, wait, we're now praying about this again? Aren't we actually doing something? And, you know, Father James Martin, who writes for America, I think had a great response to this, where in response to the, you know, God isn't fixing this, that headline on the New York Daily News, the New York Post, excuse me, he responded saying, you know, it's not that God isn't fixing this. It's that the way God is fixing this is going to be through us. It's going to be through us doing something, through our prayer actually moving us to act. And so I think that's really a place where our bishops, the leadership in the Catholic Church has been calling on us. This is not something that we just need to accept and pray and grieve over and over and over again. There are actually steps we can take to improve the way we deal with gun violence.
Right. And it can't be, and some of that is legislative, and we have to work to elect officials that will support some maybe stricter gun laws. But some of it is on us as well, because I think it's very easy to kind of say, like, well, they haven't fixed anything. You know, this politician hasn't done anything. The bishops haven't done anything. You know, what are we supposed to do? When in reality, there's those personal connections still, that element of community, that element of what do we do with you know, what we have, where we are, can still be a really powerful force for change in the world. And whether that's community organizing or just really kind of getting to know your neighbors and being willing to extend yourself, I guess.
Right. And I think that one of the things our faith always reminds us is that the temptation to despair is never the right response. So despite the fact that these incidents pile up and it feels like we're getting nowhere, we still need to respond in faith. We need to respond with compassion to the people who are suffering and who are grieving, and we need to be ready to step up again.
Amen to that. So that is story number 5 in the top 10 stories of 2015, growing unrest in the U.S. and the church's pastoral response. Number 4 in the top 10 stories of 2015, the Extraordinary Synod of Bishops on the Family, convened in Rome in October and produced lively headlines, for one, and really an unprecedented openness among participants drawn from all over the world. The synod produced frank talk about a host of issues that trouble modern family life, culminating with the release of a synod statement that, according to some participants, presented an opening to discernment and the possibility of eventual absolution and communion for some divorced and civilly remarried Catholics. The event was precipitated by a decree on annulments from Pope Francis that was meant to streamline what had been, for too many, an arduous and long and costly process. So some movement here, a debate going on during the synod and after about exactly whether there has been an opening and how big that opening is to a change on the discipline on divorce and remarried. But the process itself that the synod went through is a story, isn't it?
Definitely. I mean, Pope Francis is on record as hoping for a more synodal experience of governance in the church. So more of this open discussion among and between bishops and bishops hearing from other people in the church and making the discussion and the dialogue that he continues to call for in his papacy a reality at the very highest levels of the way the church functions. And we certainly saw that in the synod. And sometimes that got messy, which Pope Francis has also told us he's not afraid of, and we shouldn't be afraid of either. But I think it was really a fascinating experience of watching the church, the worldwide church, work in real time. And one of the things that I find really hopeful about that is that so little of it happened the way that people might have predicted it. Mm-hmm. You know, this wasn't simply a political process unfolding according to a political script. This was something different going on and the Holy Spirit at work.
And in some ways, I think it oddly mirrors how family works. So the Synod on the Family is a family sort of at the local level is messy. People argue. People disagree. People, try to work together. And ideally, you do it all in the context of love. And that's sort of what the Synod tried to be, I think, is this kind of messy family in and of itself of people who are all here with, you know, linked together, whether we like it or not, and we kind of work through our issues and do it together. And ideally, if we do it with that love, with that charity, we're all going to be better for it.
And I think one of the things we heard, even though it got sometimes buried under the news of sort of who won the argument at the synod today, a number of bishops and cardinals said consistently that they really valued the process, right, that the opportunity they had for discussion, and particularly the small group process in language groups that the synod followed, they found hugely helpful because it gave them a chance to talk to each other at much deeper levels than prior synods had.
Well, story number 10 that we talked about today was the resignation of bishops in the wake of the sexual abuse crisis, precisely because of a lack of accountability and transparency. So seeing a process on this scale in the church that was transparent and open and honest, and yes, sometimes messy, I mean, that's a big step forward in a number of ways, not just for the process of the synod, but for the church's own self-articulation. So that is story number 4, the Synod on the Family, the extraordinary in every way, canonically and otherwise, the extraordinary Synod of Bishops on the Family that convened in Rome in October. Story number 3, Laudato Si. This was the much-anticipated encyclical letter of Pope Francis that implored a global examination of conscience of our relationship with and responsibility to nature, especially in terms of building a framework for an appropriate response to global warming. This, of course, has been described in many ways. It was called his global development letter and his environmental letter and all the rest. When we interviewed Vice President Biden this year, he just said it's a human document. It is very, very plain Biden speech. But clearly, I mean, this was a moment that galvanized the world.
I think one of the wonderful things that I took away from reading that was, well, A, it was exciting to read. It was kind of long, but it was actually, a good read. It was compelling. I found myself being really moved. And one of the themes that I think a lot of people took away from that, and that, which was repeated over and over again, was that everything is connected. And that so the and that sort of extends through some of these news cycles we're talking about, that the pro-life issues, the violence in our communities, all these things are sort of part of God's creation as well. So there's the environmental aspect of it that we need to care for. But we do that in part by caring for God's creation in all forms, in all ways. And to really kind of draw all these issues together in one document was really powerful. And maybe it needed to be exactly that long.
I think
it did not fit America Magazine's mechanical requirements. So I guess we would have sent it back.
This needs a little editing, Francis.
But I think one of the things that was particularly drove home, its subtitle, On Care for Our Common Home. Mm. I think that idea of care, that the sort of it served as a moral invitation, not simply to cast this as an issue of, you know, are the environmentalists going to win out against the industrialists or something, but rather to cast it in terms of what are each of us and all of us together called to do to care for this one planet, our common home. I think it also helped the encyclical helped link together environmental concerns with concerns about economic development, and really pointed out that the costs of climate change and the costs of ignoring climate change fall disproportionately on the least well-off, the least developed countries in the world, and really made that the preferential option for the poor, brought that into the conversation on climate change as well in a way that's been, I think, profoundly important.
And the response in the United States was huge throughout the media. In part, it revealed, you know, something that I think has always been present there, but becoming more pronounced in the world in which we're living today because of the nature of social communications, which is this kind of provincialism, almost narcissism that we can have in this country. We think everything's about us, right? That and we filter everything through our own experience of being Americans, either American Catholics or otherwise, and we saw some of that. So there was a bit of the debate in the media after the encyclical was about, well, is he really criticizing capitalism? Does he not like the United States of America? And they, again, if people just read what he wrote and listened to what he says, they would have the answers to those questions. For the first time, this was an encyclical addressed to all of the people of the world. Encyclicals traditionally are addressed to bishops and priests and, of course, lay folks. And then people of goodwill are also usually added. This was addressed to everybody, even those of not goodwill. Right. And yet we were still wondering, is he talking about us in that peculiar kind of American way? So Laudato Si, the groundbreaking papal encyclical, that is story number 3 in the top stories of 2015. Story number 2. Sadly, was on our list last year, Christian persecution in the Middle East, especially in Syria and Iraq. The Holy See implored the world's major powers throughout the year to do more to protect Christians and other religious minorities from the menace that is ISIS. At year's end, U.S. Christians were pressuring the State Department to declare the continuing attacks on Christians in the region a genocide. There are places in Iraq, there are places in the Middle East where there were Christians for 800 years, and there are none now. It is an incredibly tragic story.
It is, and I think it's one that tempts us to that despair, I think, that you were talking about earlier. I think a lot of people feel just really sort of deeply saddened by this, and also really helpless by this kind of crisis, because of this kind of crisis. And that's just from afar. That would be, you know, us feeling that way. Never mind people actually experiencing this displacement, this persecution. And so I think this is where, in many ways, that the prayer and the hope that God acts through that prayer on us in ways that we maybe can't yet see to try to make change or to change ourselves is important, because otherwise. Because it's not something we can forget either. So it's a very difficult place to be, this place where you feel like, I'm not sure I can do anything, but I'm also, I know I can't do nothing, you know? So then what happens?
Right. And I think that, you know, on one level, the challenge is that there does need to be a level of political response to this, and certainly having this officially recognized by the State Department as a genocide would help direct more attention at it at that level. But there's also a level at which the real question, you know, this is going to continue to be a story throughout 2016 as well.
Yep.
It's not like we're going to come to this point next year and be able to say, oh, well, it's all fixed.
Right.
And individually, you know, most of us don't have a lot to contribute about, well, what do we do about ISIS? But I think what we do have the opportunity to do, the invitation that's offered to us is, you know, the same one that was offered to the disciples at Gethsemane. Will you not stay and wait with me?
Right.
Will you not stay and pray with me? You know, actually, one of the masses for various needs that's in the missal is a mass precisely for persecuted Christians to pray with our brothers and sisters who are suffering, who are continuing to bear in the world the suffering of Christ. And while that can sound a little mystical and maybe fuzzy at a practical level, I think I've prayed that mass as a priest, and I think it's a very powerful way of being in solidarity with, of continuing to pay attention to the suffering and to the loss, and to not be willing simply to walk away from it in despair.
It's also a political story because, in this sense, as I said, you know, there were Christian communities scattered throughout the Middle East for 1,800 years.
Yeah.
And they had frequently, through history, played the role of the middleman or the one who could convene warring factions, the group that could act as a buffer. And that element has now been removed. And one wonders how destabilizing that's going to be in an era, in a place that is already profoundly destabilized. So it's hugely discouraging on several fronts. So that is the first nine stories, top nine stories of 2015 in the Church and the World. When we come back, after a quick break, we are going to announce the number one story of the year in the judgment of American media, which is we had an extensive process to decide the number one.
The greatest judgment of all.
Maybe exactly. You can guess what it is.
So the top story in the Church and the World from American media when we come back after this break on the Catholic Channel, Sirius XM 129.
Thank you for listening to the podcast of America This Week, courtesy of the Catholic Channel on Sirius XM 129. If you want to hear the full show every week, subscribe to Sirius XM and tune in on Wednesdays at 1 p.m. Eastern to the Catholic Channel, Sirius XM 129.